In Britain, a new report from the Church of England says despite millions of pounds being poured into the nation's cities and urban areas over recent years, the gap between rich and poor continues to grow. The report, entitled Faithful Cities, also says the government is forcing asylum seekers into destitution and warns that racism is endemic among young people, making them prime targets for religious and political extremism. The new document comes 2 decades after landmark criticisms of the former Conservative government of Margaret Thatcher contained in the Faith in the City report. Here to tell us more is our regular guest and Director of Public Affairs for the Catholic Diocese of Westminster, Austin Ivory.
Yeah, the Church of England's new report, which is called Faithful Cities, and comes out to mark, as you say, the 20th anniversary of the famous Faith in the City, is really a kind of update on that report. It's looking at the cities from the Church's point of view, saying what are the continued challenges, particularly in the gap of between rich and poor, as well as highlighting what it sees as, I think, new developments which arise from the extraordinary diversity now of our cities following many years of very high levels of immigration. It's a very powerful report. I like it a lot. It's not got the edge that Faith in the City had, because at the time there was a big ideological divide between the radical market, free market philosophy of Margaret Thatcher and the idea that wealth is good and that wealth will always trickle down, and the Church at the time, which took really very much a liberation theology stance. So inevitably the government criticised Faith in the City for being Marxist, and there was a real standoff, and it created a phenomenal debate at the time. This Faithful Cities comes in a new context, of course, of a Labour government, which is itself committed to the relief of extreme poverty. When it came to power, when Tony Blair came to power in 1997, this was one of the pledges of the government. And it takes place also against a background of really enormous prosperity. And the report acknowledges not only that the Labour government has sought to reduce poverty, but also it does acknowledge, you know, the phenomenal economic growth of Britain and British cities in the last few years. Nevertheless, it highlights these elements which the Church sees, Church of England sees, as being real obstacles to human flourishing in contemporary Britain. And the press has picked up on this, even though this isn't a very big part of the report, but it's very strong on asylum seekers and very critical of the way in which destitution is used as a kind of deterrence to asylum seekers, and it criticises the fact that asylum seekers aren't allowed to work, and it's very hard-hitting words on that. It also calls on the government to consider implementing what's known as a living wage. Now, this is in contrast to the minimum wage, which is the legal minimum wage, and the Church is saying, well, actually, in cities, we need a living wage, which is obviously more than the minimum wage, in order to prevent poverty. It highlights also the phenomenal indebtedness, really dramatic, terrifying indebtedness of very poor people in hot to moneylenders who charge 200-300% interest rates. And it also highlights the rise of racism and antagonism towards the foreigner among an apathetic and dispirited and depressed urban youth, and asks some really quite challenging questions about why it is that we have got this phenomenally prosperous nation, the fourth richest in the world, in which we have extreme poverty, and not just that, but apathy and racial tension at the bottom. And it contains a number of recommendations to the Church, fundamentally. One has to remember this is a report addressed to the Church principally rather than to the government.
As you say, it makes really quite alarming reading, because it talks about the money that has been poured into Britain's inner city areas, putting up new buildings and developing very run-down areas, and yet this doesn't seem to make a difference in really lifting the poorest people out of the poverty trap.
What it's critical of, and it gives a number of examples, one particularly in Manchester, of where buildings have been built, as it were, for the poor, but completely abstracted from the context of what human beings need for fruitful living. And it's really quite critical of that. So it sees, if you like, the same tendency of government to and the state to create housing, as it were, really not taking into account the needs of the poor. And it's talking a lot about, of course, partly this report is about saying we, the Church, are important in all of this. You know, governments come and go, but the Church is there embedded in local communities and will be long after this government has gone. And so, you know, we understand. I mean, that's the subtext of the report. And it talks about faithful capital, which is a development of the idea, you probably heard the term that social theorists developed to talk about social capital, which is, if you like, the benefits, the fruitfulness of social networks and communities and so on. And the church is talking about faithful capital, meaning the social capital which the churches particularly offer communities, something that they nurture, and they list them: personal and collective transformation, love for neighbour, care for the stranger, human dignity, social justice, and it's saying really we need, this is what we need for our cities, much more than, it's not in other words just about money, it's about development which takes into account this kind of capital, which is not money capital.
Moving on to another issue that's been in the papers and is about to come onto your televisions again over there in England. About a year ago, we reported on the phenomenal success of that TV programme, The Monastery, that was filmed down in Worth Abbey in West Sussex, a kind of reality TV show with five volunteers spending 40 days and 40 nights in the Abbey, just seeing what that kind of lifestyle meant and what kind of changes it might have in their life. And I understand the follow-up to that is about to hit TV over there in England.
Yeah, well, there's two things actually happening. There's men who were involved in that first programme are going to get together again for a weekend. I think that's going to be broadcast pretty soon, and going to be talking about the changes they've undergone in their lives since that remarkable experience. Just to remind you, Philippa, this was an extraordinary phenomenon in The Monastery. It went out on BBC Two, which is not, if you like, the most popular channel, at 9 o'clock at night, and yet by the end of the three-parter, they had 3 million viewers, which was many more than these naff popular programmes on the other channels like Celebrity Get Me Out of Here and all, if you like, the obvious crowd pullers. So The Monastery's tapped into this extraordinary searching in society, and it's led to, at the time, the Worth monks very cleverly created a special website where, because they had so many thousands of hits after every programme, and they analysed the search terms that people put in, and they realised that sanctuary was one of the big things, and so they created retreats around this, which immediately got booked up. So it's been a whole kind of phenomenon of, you know, how a monastery can now speak to modern society. So we've got that follow-up, and the men getting together. We've also got a woman's follow-up. There's something called The Convent, which I just tried to find out before coming on air when it was going to be broadcast. Apparently this is a secret, but it will be sometime over the summer. But I can tell you that it will be with if The Monastery was set at Worth Abbey in Sussex, The Convent is set actually not very far away in the Poor Clares convent in Arundel. And Christopher Jameson, the abbot, who became very well known through that series because he's an enormously attractive, charismatic figure, he's got a very good coverage in this week's Catholic papers. There's an interview with him in the Tablet, and an excerpt from his new book, which is called Finding Sanctuary, in the Catholic Herald, and a very beautiful excerpt it is too. Now, I can tell you that this book, Finding Sanctuary, which is a deliberate attempt by Abbot Christopher to, if you like, speak through the experience of the monastery to those people who the monks, if you like, met through this extraordinary phenomenon. So it's a very sort of simple, straightforward book. It has something of the texture, really, of the Desert Fathers. And it's already sold so well that I've been trying to get hold of a copy at my local bookshop, and they say it's having to be reprinted. Apparently it's already sold 10,000 copies. So we're dealing here with a fascinating phenomenon, and a very exciting one, I think.
As you say, this has been a phenomenal success since that first three-part series went out. What do you think really is the secret? Is it just a clever marketing strategy, or is there something more?
I don't think it's a clever marketing strategy. I think it's a response to a particular kind of searching characteristic of contemporary society. I mean, that searching is as old as we are. I mean, St. Augustine's famous phrase, you know, our hearts are restless till they rest in God. But the restlessness, I think, takes on different forms in different ages and in different places. And one of the fascinating things about The Monastery is that, yes, they were able to package, if you like. They found a format, an intriguing format, which was a blend of, if you like, the Big Brother. It was taking the Big Brother format, but making it relevant to people, but also respecting the integrity of the monastery. And Abbot Christopher's very interesting on how they agreed eventually with the production company that particular format, because, you know, so many of these TV programs actually invade you, you know, and they actually don't show you as you are, whereas the monastery was really like living with the monks, you know, while respecting their privacy. So I think it opened up the monastery, a monastery, in a way that I think is quite unique and that could probably only be done on television. I think the second reason it was successful was that it was following a journey. And, of course, people do undergo journeys when they do a 40-day retreat and live the monastic life. So it gave the space and the time, I think, for that transformation to take place, as well as capturing it on television. And I think the third phenomenon is this idea, which is the central idea, really, of Abbot Christopher's book, which is we all need sanctuary. And he talks in the extract in the Herald about the origins of the word sanctuary, which come from not only sanctus, a holy place, but also a place of refuge. And modern society, people do not have sanctuaries. They have a busyness, which Christopher says is, of course, not so much imposed, but also what we allow ourselves to enter into. It's, if you like, the addiction of constant work and constant distraction. So we've neglected those sanctuaries inside ourselves, and therefore that makes us look for them, makes us hunger for them. So the monastery, I suppose, tapped into that yearning, that searching, and that's what this book is analysing and responding to.
My thanks to Austin Ivory there, Director of Public Affairs for the Diocese of Westminster.